Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomé River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, God bless you, dear Blood River Radio family. Just come back. Been really excited tonight. I was able to finish my 16-mile run in the frozen tundra yesterday. So I'm really, really upbeat about that because, you know, I had to nurse that old hip for a while. There for a while, I was afraid I was never going to be able to run again. But I'm back. I can't believe how well I've come back so fast. But anyway, people, as you know, we had Patrick Ryan on the first hour, and he was the guy's a real pro. I'm really, really glad to get him on. We're going to be doing some stuff with Patrick Ryan, Blood River Radio, Patrick Ryan. We have a lady coming on now. She's amazing. She's about, I think she said she was born in 1941. Believe it or not, she's older than I am. I was born in 47. Her name is Valerie Protopapas. And anyway, she writes all kinds. She's a prolific writer. She publishes this one piece in the Freedom Times newspaper of January 22nd. If I can highly recommend people, if you would go, and Don Wassel is the editor of the Freedom Times. We're going to do some things with him. And it's just a great paper. When Mr. Buddy in Arkansas gave me some papers from the Freedom Times, I said, my Lord, I wish I could have seen this thing before we first started back in 2018. I mean, they have one dynamite author after another. But right now, we have this lady, Miss Valerie Protopapas. We're going to ask her about this article she read. She wrote, The Leaders We Deserve. And I was trying to get in touch with Matt Goodwin because he would really love to tune in here because he sees kind of eye to eye with Miss Valerie on the Constitution. But Miss Valerie, I'm going to read this this article. Well, before I do that, before I read this a couple of paragraphs, well, come on, introduce the people. Give the people, the listeners of Blood River Radio, tell them, you know, all about you, where you were born, when you were born, anything you want to. Give them a little quick biography.
Well, thank you, and I'm very pleased to be invited on. I'm afraid my biographical literature is very slight. Most of what I've done has been the result of personal research. I can't say as I have a lot of letters after my name, but I've been interested in history for a long time, and unfortunately, when I get interested in a particular part of history, I tend to want to know everything about it. So I've gone from Churchill, the first Churchill, John Churchill, that was Winston's ancestor, who kept us from all speaking French because he defeated the Sun King. And then we went to William Wallace, and then we went, you know, on, and Marshall, William Marshall. So eventually I got back to my first love, which was Colonel John Singleton Mosby, the gray ghost of the Confederacy, although the man said he never heard that term used for himself when he was in the war. And history is my thing, and I write about it, and I try to learn about it. And the problem is, the older I got, the more I realized that most of what I knew wasn't true. That's very disturbing. It really is. Because then you have to go back and start again. And you have to find out where you got to be, where you were, which was wrong, and what you now know that is right. Sadly, most people are more interested in what they want to believe than what is the truth, and that's the problem today, especially today.
People, so, told you she was sharp. You know,
that's about all that I can tell you biographically. There's not really much to know about me personally, but I have an inquiring mind, and of course I hate to do housework, so anything that keeps me from that is always considered something that's worthy.
Well, you know, You said something that reminded me, I think it was the great Will Rogers once said. He said, it ain't what people don't know that hurts them. It's what they do know that just ain't so.
Well, that's what Ronald Reagan said. He said the problem with liberals is that so much of what they know isn't so.
Yes.
Which is, it's very difficult to deal with people who come at you with facts that are not. I guess Absolutely. These are the people that learned at Facebook, you know, fact checkers.
You know, and one of the things we learned all through school, and I learned it, I don't know how much of the Kool-Aid I drink. You know, we've always talked about the Constitution. I'm going to read this, a few little excerpts from this. I won't read a whole lot, but I want to introduce the readers to this article you read. It's called The Leaders We Deserve by Valerie Protopapas. It starts off like this. And so the final blow falls. It is finished, as God himself once said. He said it of his great work of redemption, but we can now say it of the noblest experiment ever attempted by man, the United States of America. As in all things, we today witness only the end of a long train of evils which has led to this final blow. It actually began in 1787 when the conference call to amend the admitted weaknesses in the Articles of Confederation was hijacked by men, including many so-called founding fathers. To accomplish what was in fact illegal under the terms of the Articles themselves, to revoke that light yoke of union and create a far more destructive and dangerous ruling document which came to be known, paradoxically, as the Glorious Constitution. In a way, it is almost amusing to hear so many patriots call loudly for return to the Constitution, when in fact, what we have 235 years after that document's ratification is the very result predicted by those who rejected it at the time. You wrote that, Miss Valerie, and it knocked me out of my shoes. I said, this lady's dogging the Constitution, and let me read further. And you know what you said made sense. Go ahead. So, and take off on that. If you tell us a little bit about that, Miss Valerie. What made you write that?
Well, I understand the problem with the Articles of Confederation. Actually, they were the second. The first was the Articles of Association that were put into place as the war began to give some sort of foundation for all of the colonies working in the same, you know, with the same idea. So the Article of Association were first, and then after the war was won, they went ahead and established the Articles of Confederation. Now, the interesting thing is that so few people understand the nature of the United States of America. For instance, the first thing that you learn is that the United is not capitalized in the original document, in the Constitution itself. United is lowercase. So what they're saying is the United States of America. The term states is not what we understand it today to be. The term states those days meant countries, France, Britain, you know, these were states. And so when the Treaty of Paris was signed, the second one was the Spanish-American War, I believe, Great Britain signed a treaty with 13 separate nations, the nation of Virginia, the nation of New York, and et cetera. There was no people, as Lincoln tried to suggest, that the people were sovereign. Yeah, the people were sovereign, but they were sovereign within the construct of their states. They were not sovereign all over. When you said the people of the we the people, as the Constitution began, they weren't talking about all of the people who lived in those 13 colonies. They were talking about the people of Virginia, people of North Carolina, and et cetera. And we lost that understanding, and in fact, we didn't lose it. It was taken from us. And the idea became that, you know, we the people were a conglomeration of people from, you know, up way up in the north down to the south, and that's what we were. But that isn't what we dealt with. Which is why, by the way, secession was understood in the Constitution. It wasn't put in the Constitution any more than slavery was, because it was understood. Imagine trying to write a document that gave you all of your rights. You wouldn't have a document. You'd have, well, you'd have a library.
Yes.
You can do this, you can do this, you can do this, you can do that. No! What it says is what you can't do. You know, you can't do this and you can't do that. And when the Constitution was first written and returned to the people of the states, the first thing somebody asked is, where are our liberties? because the Bill of Rights, as we understand it, was not part of the original Constitution. It wasn't there, boys and girls. That's why they called the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. And nobody say, well, wait a minute. What about religion and what about press and what about freedom of speech? Oh, maybe we better go back and fix that little bit. And that's what they did. That's the first 10 amendments. And when they got through with all those 10 amendments, they looked at it and they said, you know, we might have missed something here, boys and girls. So we went to the 10th Amendment, something you never hear about today. Huh. And that said, whatever we haven't said, you know, that the federal government can do, it can't. It devolves back to the states and the people. The whole thing was lost.
Go ahead, Ms. Valerie.
Oh, it's okay. I'm just saying. Yes. And then, of course, once you had the amendment proceedings, once you could amend it, you opened a can of worms, Pandora's box, because the amendments we put onto the Constitution, you might as well have thrown the whole document out. You had the 13th Amendment. Okay, so you had the 13th Amendment ending slavery. Fine, no problem. The 14th Amendment was never ratified. So we're living with the 14th Amendment that isn't.
Oh, you opened up another can of worms, Ms. Valerie. Ms. Valerie, hang on to your seats. You got me on fire. We have to go to our first break, Ms. Valerie, and we'll be right back.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Blood River Radio family, I love you guys so much. I hope you all are listening to this show. I hope you're getting something out of it. Really, I'm really enjoying our great guest staff tonight. And we're going to go back with Miss Valerie Protopapas.
Just call me Valerie. But I married a Greek. I was a Hughes, as in Howard. And I never had to spell it.
Oh, no. Hey, before we go further, something about your bio. Did you go to, are you the one that went to, like, South Africa or Rhodesia to meet your husband?
Oh, good heavens, no. My idea of travel is, you know, from the bedroom to the, you know, to the kitchen. Okay, I mean, I was never a traveler. They,
oh, I've got you mixed up.
Thing.
I know who got you mixed up. I've got you mixed up with this Miss. Well, never mind. I'm drifting again. You said some things that really got me going. We were talking about during the break. Patrick Henry, I'll put it in his own words. He hated the Constitution. He saw, he predicted, according to your newspaper article here, exactly what's happening today. And you said something else. I'm gonna let you take off on that in just a minute. You said something else. Before we even got to get the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, which was, I consider it the preamble of the Constitution. It kind of, you know, tells us what it's all, the whole thing's about. It says, and I'll make this as fast as I can. It says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, and I'm going to skip down, that, you know, we have life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to abolish, to alter, or to abolish it, and to institute new government. See, that's exactly what the South did. And I'm not preaching to you because I've learned this from Gene Andrews. The South has succeeded from the Union. They had the rights. No, you know, they really didn't need this Declaration of Independence. They had the rights from Almighty God, the Holy Bible. But according to this unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, July 4, 1776, they had the right to alter or abolish that government. That's exactly what the South did. The South said what they did, we don't want to be a part of you. We don't have anything against you. We just don't want to be a part of you. You go your way, we'll go our way. They declared their independence just like the colonies did in 1776. But no, Lincoln, I'm going to shut up just a second. Lincoln, that sorry SOB, he started, that was the first time the federal government, over that stinking flag that we called the American flag, that's the first time the federal government invaded another country. The South was a sovereign nation at that time. They'd already, and they did it legally, constitutionally, Declaration of Independence-ly, they did it, but Lincoln said, hell no. And how many nations have we invaded since then? God only knows. And I'm going to say one more thing. I'm going to shut up. And I'm going to go back to you. In your article, it says, former senator, and this is to show how the Constitution has failed a lot of ways. I'm going to have to eat crow on this. Former senator and the first and only president of the nation that those states constitutionally created. Jefferson Davis was the first and only president of the constitutionally created Confederate States of America. He said many years after the bloodiest war ever fought by Americans, get this, people, it is a satisfaction to know that the calamities which have befallen the southern states were the result of their credulous reliance on the power of the Constitution. That if it fails to protect their rights, it would at least suffice to prevent an attempt at coercion. If in the last resort, they peacefully withdrew from the Union. They did. They peacefully withdrew. And then it goes to say, one cannot wonder if the ghost of that great Virginia patriot and an enemy of the document, Patrick Henry, wails from his grave. Ergo me dexi vorbis. I told you so. What about that, Miss Valerie? Take off on that, Miss Valerie, if you don't mind.
Well, I think what we have to remember to begin with is that the Declaration of Independence was exactly intended to, as Jefferson understood it, to tell Europe that for the reason that the British colonists, because that's what we were, even though there obviously were people here who were not British, to tell France, you know, to tell the Netherlands, to tell all the European countries that, and by the way, the European countries were not what we have today. I mean, Germany was still a lot of kingdoms. Garibaldi had not yet brought Italy into one country. You had the great city-states of Venice and Rome. I mean, the centralization had begun, which is why Lincoln's government and his army were filled with the socialist revolutionaries in Europe, the 48ers, they're called. There's a book about that. the 48ers. They were communists. Karl Marx loved Lincoln, loved him, and wrote about him, and wrote to him. Most people have no idea about this. There's a book written called Red Republicans, and I'm trying to think of the name. When I try to think of names, I'm doomed. But in any event,
Join the club.
The Declaration of Independence was a, what would you call it, propaganda? I guess that's the best name for it. Telling the people of Europe and the leaders of Europe what was going on, because they were only going to get their information from Britain, and it was not going to be good information. It was going to be all the wrong kind of information. Now, another very interesting thing that I have written about also is that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness was not what Jefferson wrote first. He wrote life, liberty, and property.
Property, correct.
And the whole thing is, if you listen to the Bonnie Blue Flag, they say that our property that we, you know, we got with sweat and toil and our efforts. The understanding of property, we understand it today, but by the way, we're going to lose it because right now they're moving to remove the opportunity for you to own property unless you're very wealthy. And we're going to be like the Chinese in those huge apartment buildings that take up, you know, a half a city. They're going to say, you're going to own nothing and you're going to be happy about it.
Correct.
That's where we're going, boys and girls. But then
yes,
when you get to the Constitution itself, now the Constitution is a contract. Anybody who's had a business or, if you bought a home, you signed a contract. When you have a contract, everybody in that contract has the same rights. You can't have one have more rights or less rights than the other. When the Constitution was sent home, and by the way, it was not happily greeted by everybody. There was a lot of people who didn't like it. So three states decided they didn't like the idea that they couldn't withdraw. There was nothing in it to allow you, though you acceded to it, there was nothing in it that said you could secede from it. So three states, Rhode Island, the littlest, New York, and Virginia, put into their ratification papers the ability to withdraw from this contract. All three of them. They put that, you know, if we don't like what's going on, if it's not to the benefit of our people. Virginia, of course, was very erudite when they put it in. New York and Rhode Island said, hey, if we ain't happy, we're leaving. You know, the Virginians didn't talk like that. But they, you know, they made it sound very good. All the other states, the other 10, looked at this, what their ratification documents said, and accepted them. Now, when they saw those ratifications were in their ratification documents about secession, when that Constitution was signed by all of the representatives, secession was accepted. Because three of the parties had put that into their documents. And you couldn't have three parties with different rights. Now, nobody said to Virginia or Rhode Island or New York, listen, you got to take those out or we're not signing this. They figured, okay, that's what they want. We'll sign it. No problem. So the idea that there was no secession in the Constitution is nonsense. It was interesting if you look and... I have all these documents. This is what I do instead of cleaning, I told you. President Buchanan, a Southern Democrat who did not like secession, went to his Attorney General, Jeremiah Black, a very brilliant man.
And Andrew Jackson.
And No. Black.
Andrew Jackson, you know. Andrew Jackson. He didn't. Well, we got to go to a quick break, but Miss Valerie, hang on. I was just going to say Andrew Jackson. He didn't want to succeed either, I don't think. But anyway, we'll go. You're the expert on that. People, we'll go right back. This hour is going too fast. We're going to go right back to Miss Valerie Propapappas after this brief commercial.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Former President Barack Obama memorialized the late Senator Harry Reid, Obama delivering the eulogy during Saturday's private service in Las Vegas. Obama saying Reid was not your typical political figure.
I heard Nancy Pelosi say she never heard Harry say anything bad about any of his colleagues. I don't know about that, Nancy. But he would work with them.
Inglewood Mayor James Butts says Super Bowl 56 will be played February 13th at SoFi Stadium, despite a surge of COVID cases in Southern California. Butts' statement coming one day after California state officials implemented an indoor mask mandate until mid-February because of the increase in cases fueled by the Omicron variant. This is USA Radio News.
You know, if you feel like you're stuck with a healthcare plan that isn't affordable or you simply don't like it, right now is a great time to switch to MediShare. The typical family saves $500 or more per month with MediShare, and what's more, they like it. MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate when compared to health insurance. Double. You get access to a massive network of providers and 24/7 telehealth. And MediShare is the most trusted name in healthcare sharing. It's been around for more than 25 years, and it's more than just affordable healthcare, too. You get to be part of a community of Christians who pray for each other and support each other. But here's why now is the time to make the switch. Join before January 15th, and they'll waive your new member fee. You'll save another $170 right off the bat. Call now. You'll get a price within 2 minutes. And again, the deadline is January 15th, so you can save even more. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE, 833-34-BIBLE.
Americans are traveling less by air. That's according to a Gallup survey, which said fewer Americans traveled by air last year than any other year in its records between 2003 and 2015. Only 38% of United States adults polled said they had taken at least one trip on a commercial airliner over the past year. That number is down from the 2006 to 2015 period, when 43% to 48% of Americans said they traveled by air. Over 14 tons of ground beef are being recalled because of E. coli. Authorities saying meat from interstate meat distributors packaged on December 20th may be contaminated with dangerous bacteria. Officials saying they're concerned some contaminated beef may already be in consumers' refrigerators or freezers. The meat was sold in Arizona, California, Nevada, and Utah. This is USA Radio News.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
You know, people, this is really a exercise in intellectualism. It's a strain in my poor old brain, man. But I'll tell you, I'm really, really enjoying this. Miss Valerie is, you can tell, I don't have to tell you how sharp she is, because she is very, very sharp. I'm going to read this other little paragraph, Miss Valerie, and then we're going to continue going on to stuff we talked about during the break. It says, but, we said Patrick Henry and some of the other people that did not, they hated that Constitution. They didn't want to sign it, but they went along after it was done, a done deal. They said they predicted what was happening, what we're living through right now, this utter communist takeover. But you said this, you got this written in here. But the Constitution was only the beginning of the effort to destroy a representative republic and replace it with an empire ruled by central authority, the destructive nature of the so-called federal government. Was that an effort? Was it really an effort to destroy? Was the Constitution, Miss Valerie, in your opinion, I know you talked about earlier, you talked about the Articles of Association, and I never heard of that until you told me, and I heard about the Articles of Confederation, and you talked about how the Treaty of Paris recognized each member of the colonies as a separate state, as a sovereign state. Okay, was this Constitution that came three, it was the third document, first we had the Articles of Association, then the Articles of Confederation, now we have the Constitution. Was the Constitution a slick, conniving, backstabbing way, was it meant to eventually destroy a representative republic and replace it with an all-destructive, all-powerful beast, the federal government, Miss Valerie? Would you think it was intentional?
Well, I think that you have to look at the individuals. I'm sure with Benjamin Franklin it wasn't, although Franklin warned that as soon as the representatives of the national government, or the federal government, as it was called, learned that they could take money from the public treasury and buy their way into the next election, that the republic was over. He said that as much. Now, Alexander Hamilton had a very different understanding of where the Constitution was going. He's the one that wanted what that was called the what's it called? It's a mercantile system. He called it the American system, and what it is crony capitalism or
fascism. He wanted a central
fascism.
Bank, too. He also wanted a central bank, right?
Oh, of course. He wanted what Britain has. You can't be an empire with 13 different people. I mean, the states were all different. They were as different as they could be. The enemy of my enemy is my friend was what held us through the Revolutionary War. But there was a lot that went on. For instance, everybody who knows about the Revolutionary War knows that it was won in New England. Hell no, it wasn't won in New England. It was won in the South. We heard about the ride of Paul Revere, but there's one that happened in the South. You don't know what the name of it is. I don't know what the name of it is. All that you hear comes from New England. What New England was, what New England happened. New England was considered insane by the rest of the country when it was just the 13 colonies. They were all considered nuts up there. They thought the Pennsylvanians were stupid. They thought the Southerners were black. There's a newspaper article that when Jefferson was elected, we have elected our first black president. That was at the time of Jefferson being elected. How far back are we going, boys and girls? Now, why did they say that? Because he had slaves, not because he had any kind of dealings with those slaves. They looked at the South, and they hated the white people of the South because they considered them, what would you say, mixed blood, because they had a relationship with blacks that was hierarchical indeed, with whites on the top, but it was also very amiable. I mean, look what happened when Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation came. Lincoln expected the South, the slaves in the South, to rise up like Nat Turner did and kill the women and children and old people, white people, and that the soldiers would flee from the Confederate army to protect their families. Never happened. And nobody was more surprised than Lincoln. That was what it was all about, a servile insurrection. And it didn't happen. Why? Because there was love there. John Mosby, about whom I wrote in great detail, said that he hated slavery per se, but he remembered the slaves of his youth that cared for him as a sickly child. And he said, we loved them, and they loved us. The North didn't understand that for love nor money. If you read Northerners who went into the South, one man wrote in high dudgeon that some, I won't use the term, but you understand the term, walked hands with a white man. Now, this man was a slave, but he was horrified, one, that he would have the temerity to do that, and two, that the white man would shake his hand. When you look at what happened in the Civil War, you are looking at people in the North that despised the people in the South, not for their slavery. The only thing that the businessmen of the North hated about slavery was its expense. They had a labor pool there, the so-called wage slaves. They took them off the ships. They put them in the mills and the mines and the factories. And if they got sick, they threw them out. In the South, if you had a slave, it was like the ASPCA. You had to take care of him. You couldn't just abandon him. It was your duty to feed him, to clothe him, to house him. If he got sick, to care for him. If he couldn't work because he was too old or too young, you still cared for him. That's what it was like. And if you read what they call the Slave Chronicles, you read many blacks who mourned the loss of slavery because they had homes. They could buy their way out of slavery. The man who owned the most black slaves in South Carolina, which was definitely a slave state, was himself a black man who'd been a slave and invented something to be used with the cotton gin and bought his way out of slavery and owned more black slaves than any other person in South Carolina.
I've read that.
His money wasn't taken from him. People don't know what they're talking about when they talk about slavery. They really don't. I mean, and they don't want to know. If you tell them these things, they get mad at you.
You nailed it. You know what, Miss Valerie? In some ways, I hate to say it, but the majority of the American people, even the highly educated people in America, especially the whites, are stupid. You know what? And I think they know to key in on what you said, and they know they're stupid, and they're proud of it. And if you're not stupid with them, then they hate you.
Well, it's not that they're stupid. It's that they want. C.S. Lewis used a term. If you read Lewis, one of the greatest Christian apologists of the 20th century, and you should definitely read Lewis. And he talks about the spaniel in me. That you want to be liked and you want to be loved and you want to be patted on the head by these people.
That
you should be. You should want to put a bullet right between their eyes because they're evil.
That, man, that is great. I wrote C.S. Lewis down. When I get time, I'll sure read that.
He wrote one called Mere Christianity, in which it was a series of radio broadcasts.
It was called
in which he speaks about Christianity. Now, he was an atheist when he was in university, and he didn't want to be a Christian. And one of his professors, whom he respected, he said, look, you know, Jack, he was called Jack. His name was Clive Staples Lewis, and he hated it. So everybody called him Jack. And he said, Jack, look into it. You're intelligent. Look into it. If you still feel the same way, fine. Well, he looked into it, and guess what? He said he was dragged into the church kicking and screaming because he didn't want to go.
Sounds kind of like me.
Well, once you admit to... See, this is... Let me tell you, I will give you three words that was said that is the crux of everything we're dealing with today. And it came during a trial. When the Sanhedrin brought Jesus of Nazareth to Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor, and they could not execute him. But it was a political problem, not a religious problem. And Pilate turns to Jesus and he said, "They say you're a king. Are you a king?" And Christ says to him, "My kingdom is not of this world." And then he said that
break. I'm sorry. We have to go to our last break. We'll be right back after this. Man, this hour is going too fast. People, hold on. We've got this great intellectual exercise, very educational. Miss Valerie Protopapas. We'll be right back after this.
This is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help. And thank you for joining the fight.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
People, hang on your seats. Before we go any further, I'm going to read this quick poem. Vice is a monster of so frightful mien as to be hated needs but to be seen. Yet seen too oft, familiar with her face, we first endure, then pity, then embrace. We'll get to that later. But before that, before we go there, Miss Valerie, please continue on and finish what you were talking about before we went to the break.
Well, everything we're looking at, you know, we have a tendency to look at things from here, from this perspective, from political perspective, from religious perspective, blah, 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 blah. It's all the same. When Christ was brought before Pilate, he asked him if he were a king, and he said that he had been born into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice. Pilate then asks this question, what is truth? Not what is the truth? Because the truth, of course, differs from, you know, what's 2 + 2? It's 4. That's a truth. But what is truth? We've lost the understanding of the essential nature of absolutes, including truth. Oh, well, you know, that worked well. Yeah, but it was crooked. It was wrong. It was, you know, it was wrong. Oh, well, that's all right. It worked the way we wanted it to. This is what happens when I hear people talk about the election of this year and 2024. If we don't fix the election of 2020, friends, we won't have an election because it says that you can cheat. And you can, when that cheating is done, you accept as the result what happened with the cheating. If we don't stop accepting what is wrong, because we happen to like maybe how it worked out, you know, I kind of like that. It worked out good for me. I got something good out of it. If we don't use truth as our standard, then we don't have anything. We just don't have anything. This is the same thing that happened, for instance, looking at truth, how it was in the past. President Buchanan asked his attorney general, Jeremiah Black, and he said, bring me a constitutional way to stop secession and bring the states that have seceded back into the Union. And Black, and it's available. You can find it. You can read it. And he said, you can't. You can't. They're allowed to leave. You cannot force them back in because that's treason. Nobody knows, you know, they talk about treason, the treason of the Civil War. The treason is Article 3, Section 3 of the Constitution. And it said treason shall happen when someone attacks the states. Now, the federal government is not a state. So when the federal government turned and invaded Virginia and the Carolinas and et cetera, that was treason. And anybody who helps that treason is a traitor. Everybody who wore that blue uniform was a traitor according to the Constitution. You can't get around that.
That's brilliant. I've never heard that. I never thought of it that way. You're absolutely right.
Article 3, Section 3. It's very simple. It's really very simple. It's not difficult. It's easy to read. Oh, well, and what Lincoln made treason was disobedience to the federal government. That's not treason. That's not treason at all.
It says treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them and or adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. You're absolutely right. Moving on, because with a couple of things we need to hit before we leave the Civil War. It says many people believe that they eventually achieved real freedom with the end of Reconstruction, but actually all that happened is that every other American's liberties were eroded away until there was little or no difference between the South after Reconstruction and the rest of the nation without it. The only thing that grew stronger was the central government, and this is how it continued. How about that, Miss Valerie? I think that was brilliant when you wrote that.
Well, that's one of the things I learned when I wrote about John Mosby. Mosby worked in California for the Southern Pacific Railroad, and there was a strike at that time called the Pullman Strike. And it was one of the first big non-union strikes in the nation. And he wrote to Washington, to his friends in the government and et cetera, saying that they actually stopped everything. They came out in great numbers, and you couldn't get on the trains because the trains weren't running. And he said that they had to send the federal troops because California didn't have the power to handle the matter. And that's when I wrote in the book, he forgot that the war that he was involved in destroyed California's ability to do that. Like, not only the states of the South were lessened and made subservient to the central government, but all the other states were as well. It isn't just that the South was, enslaved. Every other state lost. Look what's happening today with these vaccines. The states, many of the states are starting to take back their sovereignty. They're looking at what's going on and saying, oh, wait a minute. Then you have those states which are on the left that are perfectly fine with it. And this is what happens when you destroy the concept that supposedly was ensconced in the Constitution. And every little bit, you know yourself, you have something going on and you say, well, I'll just do a little bit of this. It's not really right. It's not really good. But what the heck? It's not going to hurt anything. And thus it goes. A little here, a little there, a little there. And the next thing you know, it's a disaster. It's a disaster because you have willingly given up. What the only way you can have decency is if that's what Benjamin Franklin, who was no Christian, he said that this country was only would only work with a Christian moral mindset. He wasn't talking about creed. He wasn't talking about churches. He was talking about our moral understanding of what is right and what is wrong, of absolutes, the absolute truth. The things that you cannot do because they're wrong. Now all that's gone. Now it's all the utilitarian philosophy of humanism, the ability to say, well, this is forgivable because it wouldn't be forgivable under ordinary circumstances, but now you can do it because gay marriage, changing a child's sex, deciding that you want your son to be a daughter. Yes, I mean, in the good old days, they would have taken you out and hanged you from a tree, and I would have provided the rope, because this is evil.
Miss Valerie says, you've hit on all cylinders here. The major stumbling block to the creation of an all-powerful state, even though they won the Civil War, even though we lost Lincoln's War when he invaded us and everything, it said still, the major stumbling block to the creation of an all-powerful state, of course, was America's Christian heritage. This was known for a long time, and efforts to undermine the morality of the people began even before the end of the 19th century. I'm going to go fast because we're running out of time. With the 19th century educators and philosophers such as John Dewey, and they brought their atheism and humanism into the American educational system. And gradually, we're moving fast forward, gradually America would never be free of Christian influence until it was destroyed in the young. That's why they got with John
Dewey.
That's
what we're looking at today with our so-called public education.
That's right, with the Frankfurt School. Okay, then fast forward, it says, but it does not take a brilliant scholar to realize that if such judicial rulings as abortion on demand and gay marriage, so I'm getting back to that poem we read about vice is a monster so frightful. Okay, but it does not take a brilliant scholar to realize a ruling such as abortion on demand and gay marriage, if it had been attempted before 1950, just as you said, those people would have been hung.
Yes,
here's
they
the crux, people.
They would have gone to Washington. And, of course, you realize, by the way, that the legislators realized that they could not pass these things either. So they used the courts. And when people said, how can you allow that? It was the Supreme Court. What could we do?
But they laid down, but the people would not, the Supreme Court or no Supreme Court, going back to this title, the leaders we deserve, the people would have said, to hell with it, we'll hang in the damn Supreme Court.
Well, not only that, you would have had the legislators themselves would not have put up with it, because they would have known that the people would have turned on them in the next election. You allowed this to happen?
And it says right here, to answer just what you said, here's why it happened. Little by little, America's values were worn down away, little by little. Americans, here's the crux, people. Americans themselves became almost as corrupt, venal, and wicked as their rulers. Churches, in the name of social justice, embraced policies that directly contradicted the teachers of Christ in their own doctrines. Okay, then it says, but the killing, as it goes on down here, but the killing blow, I'm reading for your paper, but the killing blow to the great experiment was not delivered by a communist Muslim mulatto foreigner whose ineligibility for his office, both in talent and credentials, was well known. No, the killing blow came from none other than we the people.
Yeah.
What about that, Miss? What about that, Miss?
Well, the thing is, they learned that if they could keep us, the Romans did it best, bread and circuses. I mean, you could ask anybody who's in the Super Bowl, who's in the World Series. We were more interested in sports. We were more interested in entertainment. We were more interested in the frivolities of life. We never saw what was happening until we now see it, and now we've kind of lost the ability to do anything about it. I mean, right now you have people, they're going to have mandates. These vaccines, so-called, kill. I've seen the pictures of people, young people, dropping dead. And you say to yourself, if you did that even 10 years ago, they would have said, what are you talking about? We're not going to tell. Now they'll throw you out of your job. They've got pilots that they get up there and they'll die. Well, that's nice. You're in a plane at 30,000 feet, and your pilot and co-pilot are dead. I hope somebody can fly the damn plane.
You're absolutely right.
It's our fault, because we should have been paying attention. But with each generation, what did somebody say? Difficult times make tough people, and tough people make easier times, and easier times eventually result in weak people.
You're true, absolutely true. Miss Mallory, we're almost out of time.
For inviting me on.
Yes, ma'am. The leaders we deserve, and we deserve leaders, because this United Nations, United States of America, has become as corrupt and venal as any nation on earth. That's why we are living under this complete communist takeover. Miss Valerie, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, ma'am. I'll be contacting you again.
There's enough of us maybe to take it back. I don't know.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Rand, for being here. Thank you, Jay and Cameron. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, people, for tuning in. We're out of time, so I will say good night. And same place, same time next week, be the 15th. Good night, everybody.